Blog Talk Radio.
We'll be right back.
The American people allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation. The banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson.
All right. Welcome aboard onto the Truth Train here on blogtalkradio.com/Truth Emerges Network. I'm Sonny Thomas, filling in for the lovely Liberty Lisa, who's not able to be on board the train. So we're going full steam ahead. We've got the coal fire burning bright, and we've got the fire of liberty on our minds. That's definitely what we're going to be hitting for tonight. We were going to have some prearranged show talking about Article 5 and also Mark Levin's book on how it's totally misleading conservatives all across America, because, in fact, just because Sean Hannity thinks that Mark Levin is so great, that his Liberty Amendments book is basically selling hotcakes, but what it's essentially calling for is a Constitution Convention, which is the last thing we need right now. The prime example of what's actually going on is what's going on in Ukraine. So I'll dive into more detail on that. Number to call in is 347-855-8301. That's 347-855-8301. So topics are wide open for the next 2 hours, and we're going to cover a lot of detail and a lot of different things that's going on in the information war and trying to expose exactly what the New World Order is really trying to push on this complete global takeover. We are seeing a war on all fronts at this particular point. Generally hold to be of some value is totally under attack. Anything of any type of value or any type of real honesty is now to be questioned, which has been in works, especially for the last close to 100 years, because you had basically thoughts of the Frankfurt School, which was the infamous Marxist school of thought in Frankfurt, Germany, about the time of Hitler's rise to power. When Hitler finally did rise to power, he was knocking out all the communists and Marxists out of Deutschland. And so, fearing for their lives, the Frankfurt School immediately relocated to New York City, and no sooner did they come to this great country, they attacked the very host in which welcomed them. So they've done all sorts of different things, totally culturally, watered down and destroyed this country on a whole new level, which led to the New Left movement of the 1960s. And I think where the linchpin was to really make it grow was the assassination of John F. Kennedy, because after that, the surrealism of Camelot was destroyed. So clearly obvious at that point, the globalists were in charge because they knew Kennedy was, in their minds, compromised, because he had a sense of duty, because he had taken an oath to the Constitution. He had served in the United States Navy. He was also a war hero from the famous PT-109 accident. And so he realized his duty as president came first and foremost, as besides being a well-rounded family and global elitist. So John F. Kennedy stood up against the globalists, and it cost him his life. So needless to say, we have what we have. And then when Johnson came in, and shortly after, the Gulf of Tonkin, which is a complete fabricated incident, happened. It took 40 years to finally declassify that as a complete hoax. Even McNamara said it never happened. So when you got your Secretary of Defense telling you straight up that it never happened, that guy should be immediately tried on war crimes, because of the fact that he was the one who made propagators to make sure that Johnson sent in full troops, combat troops into South Vietnam. So Kennedy was going to pull us out by 64 because he knew it was a bad choice. And knew that no matter what you did, the Vietnamese would rally with each other regardless if they're communist or democratic. So he knew that was a losing battle, and he was going to get us out, and of course it cost him his life. And I think that many linchpins that helped lead to this was him signing executive order, essentially abolishing the Fed, as well as knocking down many of the sacred cows that were already established after World War II, such as Aaron Dulles, and going and sending his brother after the unions, the Teamsters Union under Jimmy Hoffa, as well as the La Cosa Nostra, which was the very same group that actually helped flip the race for him in Chicago, because otherwise Nixon should have been our president in 1960, not John F. Kennedy. So, nevertheless, Kennedy did prove himself to be a, you know, our last real president, more or less. I mean, he did many things that was actually helped stimulate this country, such as tax cuts and everything else, that because Eisenhower's stagnant economy had become. Now, a lot of it you can't totally blame on Eisenhower, because Eisenhower was totally inundated with military spending bills left and right. So it really kind of frowned upon Eisenhower because of the fact that he was kind of bogged down in this military spending all the time, and he knew it was wrong, which is why he spoke out in his farewell address in 1960. So now we have the famous coined term after that, the military-industrial complex, and we've seen many other majorly thought-out movements and groups such as that having some sort of insert-the-blank industrial complex, such as Big Pharma, GMO, and all this other stuff is now becoming rampant all across the United States and in the rest of the globe. So let's take a look at the situation that's going on in Ukraine. Ukraine obviously voted to get the hell out and be independent. But Russia wanted to make sure that they got their piece of the pie that was properly entitled to them, the military bases, the gas lines, and things like that, because that's all Russian property. So the West is basically painting the Russians as the aggressor, and they're just trying to get what's theirs. That would be no different if, let's just say for the sake of argument, Cuba decided to go ahead and take Guantanamo Bay back. We'd just be trying to get all of our personnel and property out of there before they swallowed the whole section of that island up and brought it back into Cuba. So, you know, it's an interesting situation in that right. It's no different than if we still owned all the land in Panama Canal and we were just trying to get all of our property back out of it that was properly ours before we actually vacated. So, interesting stuff nevertheless. Okay, just to kind of give you a little updates coming up on my show, the Sunday Thomas Show, this Thursday. I've actually got a couple of guests that are still tentative at this time, but should be pretty much locked in probably by tomorrow. One's definitely locked in. If anyone's any fan of Scottish history, April 6th is Tartan Day. And so since the show we have is on April 3rd, we're going to go into a little bit of Scottish history and tradition, and we're going to cover a little bit of that aspect, as well as talk about the Scottish independence movement and some of the things that they're doing that can actually undermine that movement and some of the flaws that they have in the movement within itself, especially being pushed by the Scottish National Party. One of the things I've talked about before is that you see the rise of nationalism all across the globe in various countries, especially where there's a lot of debt-ridden derivatives and bankers that are coming in and robbing the places dry. You've seen a lot of nationalism rising where they've allowed this complete leftist New World Order agenda with their immigration policy run amok, such as in France and in Sweden. You see a lot of national groups rising. You're also starting to see more stuff rising here in the United States. What you're seeing, for example, in Sweden, they're really starting to crack down. In Norway, they've officially, in Denmark, they've officially acknowledged Danish as the official language of that country because there's just too many Muslim groups that are speaking in their native languages and scaring the hell out of people because they don't know what the hell they're saying. And nobody really wants to talk about what the ravaging of the white female population in Sweden is rampant. I mean, just absolutely astronomical numbers that are happening where many white girls and white women are being gang raped by these Muslim extremists. And this is very concerning because of the fact that if the mainstream media doesn't talk about this, when are they going to talk about real freaking issues, man? If they don't talk about the banksters. They don't talk about anything that really matters. They're more worried about what Justin Bieber's doing in the clink instead of throwing proper people in the clink such as Barack Obama. Oh, I'm sorry, Barry Sitaro. That fucker should be in the clink where he belongs, man, with some nice jewelry on arms and ankles. And a nice orange jumpsuit. Maybe Brits is hanging off his ass so he can let his fellow inmates know he's their bitch. I mean, this is the type of shit that's going on, man. We need to start speaking out while we still have the opportunity. You better say something now while we still have the chance, because if you don't say anything now, you won't be able to say it later. We're seeing this First Amendment being assaulted on every single aspect that you could think of. Political correctness, using extra soft language, Common Core, basically saying that 2 plus 2 equals 5, But if you do come up with a problem and the answer is 300, we're going to keep the number 200 because it doesn't sound as intimidating as 300. I mean, this is the type of bullshit that's going on. I can understand how the social engineers are doing a fantastic job in unraveling everything in this country that matters. I mean, I see it every day. Here in the Southwest Ohio area, these Bengals fans are a prime example. You want to see a complete idiot bunch of stupid motherfuckers, just look at an average Cincinnati Bengals fan. I mean, these guys worship a team that hardly ever wins games worth a shit. Typically, Cincinnati Bengals have always had a poor defense and a moderate offense. And just because you've got Marvin Lewis as your coach, who the hell is he? He's a joke. I mean, what the fuck can do? He's managed to get the team into a halfway decent, moderate team, okay? No different than what Don Shula did in the late 80s when he took the Bengals to the Super Bowl, but they went up against the 49ers. It was a 10-time higher-funded and better-trained team. They lost both times. What a joke. I mean, people sit there and watch sports games. I tell you, I think the two worst games to watch, besides NASCAR going around in fucking circles, is basketball. And I can't think of anything else more idiotic to watch than baseball and basketball games. I mean, it's so goddamn stupid. And the tribalism, oh, my God. You can see how the social engineers have done a fantastic job on dividing us, not only on racial lines, but on tribal lines when it comes to sports teams. Here in Ohio, there's a huge rivalry against the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals. I feel sorry for anyone who lives in Columbus because of the fact that they could go either way. You know, but one thing that does bother me, when they want to use that as kind of an area or regional pride, they often flash these teams. And you see what illegal aliens do when they come into this country? They'll go and quickly start buying up the local professional teams. So they blend in. You know, if they don't want to be not obvious, if they come in Southwest Ohio, which actually in Hamilton County, in Butler County, and actually I think it's more Butler County, we have the highest concentration of Hispanics in the Midwest besides Chicago. And that's because of all the day laborers that we got going on here and all the construction going on in Westchester and in Sharonville, which is the northern part of Cincinnati, by 275. So you see all these guys walking around with Bengals shit and Cincinnati Reds. Once they get a little bit close to Dayton, they'll go buy Dayton Dragons. Here's a prime example, UD Flyers. What an absolute egg on the face for anyone who lives in Dayton. You know, one of the things I hate about talk radio and Clear Channel in general is that, for example, WHIO, which is a major channel here in the Dayton area, always has been, always well-funded, more than any other station here in the Dayton area, okay? The TV station is always top-notch, top graphics, top sets, perfect lighting, you name it, okay? You look at any of the channels, 45, 22, 2, they all look like they're budgeted back in the early 80s. I mean, that's what their sets look like. They look like complete shit, you know? But one of the things that really bothers me is that this UD thing that happened here. I mean, we keep on propelling these smaller league teams into these higher leagues, and then when they lose against a higher-funded college, and they played a good game, from my understanding. Again, I don't watch basketball. I think it's a waste of time. But they had riots here at UD campus to the point where they had to bring police riot gear out to squelch all the damn people in the dorms and shit for raising hell because UD Flyers lost. Really? Holy shit, dude. Now, this is something interesting. If you want a little microscopic a spectrum of what it's going to be like when there's an economic collapse in this country, look at how these sport teams fans act. 5 years ago, we had the remnants of Hurricane Ike come up through this part of Ohio. It knocked out power for over 2 weeks in most of the area, okay? At the time, I lived in Franklin, which is the town adjacent here to Springboro, and my power was out for a good solid week at least. And now in Springboro, most of the power was out for damn near 2 weeks. There was one small section of town which had a real old power line going to it. It was on a different channel for whatever reason, and those few city blocks still had power most of the time. At the speedway I worked at, we eventually had to have a generator cut into the power line so we can actually run power and then try to. We were the only available business open for several days after we were closed for damn near a week. what's interesting is we had to maintain the store overnight, which no one would break in the glass doors and windows and start foraging for food. What I saw was clear example, and you hear eFoods Direct had put a commercial out a couple of times on Alex Jones' radio show, where they talked about how after so many days when there's no food, people start acting squirrely. After 3 days, your nice neighbors start turning into assholes. By 5 days, they're starting to forage. By 10 days, they have roving bandits. And by 15 days, absolute mobs going from door to door, ransacking whatever it can get. And I guarantee you, they're not just going to be looking for food. They're going to be looking for anything else that they can plunder. We saw that in Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans, where not only were gangs running rampant there and sniping at people, the cops were abandoning their posts and looting the damn places. Come on, you got no power. What the fuck are you going to do with a television set? It's straight up looting. I could see if you were actually going into a grocery store and trying to get soups, bread, something to sustain yourself. That's a little bit different than walking out with a pair of Nikes or a plasma screen TV. Be quite honest, if I was a cop, I'd say, drop the shit, I'm going to drop you. I would have shot whoever was looting in the fucking leg. I'm serious. I would have put up with that shit. And I would handcuff them and charge them accordingly after I dragged them back through the water back to someplace. Even if I had to handcuff them to a fence and come back later on with an airboat and go fetch all the people I arrested, you know what I mean? Because it is. It's criminal what they were doing there. And then the cops are abandoning their posts and looting as well. So who's going to protect you? Who's going to defend you? Nobody. So those are some things you really need to think about. The social engineer has done an excellent job dividing us on race, on gender, on culture, on language, and on competency when it comes to dumbing down tests for students. I mean, Christ out west, if you're Hispanic and you can't understand the test in English, no problem. We'll put them in English for you or in Spanish for you. Really? Country, you don't know English, get the hell out. I mean, you come think about this. If you're in Italy, if you don't know Italian, you're not going to get very far. If you're in Germany, you don't know German, you're not going to get very far. If you're in Russia, you don't know Russian, you're definitely not going to get any far. And if you're in Saudi Arabia, okay, or Jordan, and you don't know the native tribal language, you're fucked. If anything, they're going to take advantage of you because you don't know the language. Prime example of that is the movie Training Day with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke, where the scene where Denzel asks Ethan Hawke's character, how well is your Spanish? He goes, oh, that's not too bad. I know most of you. Like, you better make sure you know that shit because they could be sitting there laughing at you and telling you how they're going to do your demise right in front of you and basically cut your head off and shit down your throat. And you're laughing with you and go, yeah, that's cool, man. I like that idea. That's cool. You need to know the language whenever you're in any type of tribalistic situation. It's no different if you're in New York in the 1920s, when each major block or section of the city was owned by a particular ethnic group. If you don't know Polish, you don't know Italian, you don't know Yiddish, or you don't know German, you're not going to get very far in those blocks. And they sure as hell ain't going to allow you to go through their territory unless you, A, know the language, you know what they're talking about, B, might want to pay them tribute or give them at least some flattery, compliment them and explain why. Because you're going to get your ass kicked. I don't give a damn what your ethnic group is. Prime example of that is the movie The Warriors, where they show how the street gangs basically are running parts of New York. That's actually Dee Snider's favorite movie. He's got every single version of that film on any medium you can imagine. DVD, VHS, MP4. I mean, that's one of his favorite all-time movies, which also influenced the Come Out and Play album in 1985. It's the opening song, Come Out and Play, where you can hear them rattling on the manhole covers, and they're saying, Twisted Sister, come out and play. And, of course, the album cover itself on the record was cool because you can flip open the album cover and Dee Snider pops out. Oh, man, weren't records cool? Boy, I miss those days. Okay, topic is wide open, 347-855-8301. 347-855-8301. Now, we're going to play a couple clips here. I had a clip I was trying to format last week, and I didn't get time to format it correctly, but I formatted it this week. But one of the topics I do want to talk about, for example, the social engineers and how they divide us, is the infamous Southern Poverty Law Center run by Morris Deeds. Now, this guy's an interesting character all on his own, okay? the guy is a known pedophile. That's written from his ex-wife's court records in their divorce in 1978, I believe, 79. And he clearly showed that Morris Dees actually went after their own kids. I mean, the guy's a sick fuck. I mean, he really is. He's a Zionist Jew, and also he makes money off of creating false hates against other people. Now, what's most interesting is recently to show how desperate his plan is to keep extrapolating money from dipshit people who are like, oh, watch out for this guy or watch out for this group. They fabricate hate. It's to the point now where he's basically labeling individuals as hate groups. Really? Wow. Does that mean you're scraping the bottom of the barrel there, Dees? And who's that other jackass he always has up doing his PR with him? Michael, what's his name? Potnick or whatever. Oh, that guy's a real piece of work. I mean, look at that guy. That guy looks like he gives candy to little boys. That's for damn sure. Hey, little boy, want some candy? I mean, come on. That guy's a real sick-looking son of a bitch. You ever get a chance to listen to him speak, man? I wouldn't mind checking his background. But interesting enough, anyone who has any real values whatsoever, that you're more traditionalistic, whether it's if you believe in the traditions of this country, of this nation, or just general social issues that you actually draw the line in the sand on, that you're more conservative on or traditional on. For example, a lot of blacks do not approve of homosexuality, though they may believe in having children out of wedlock because, I mean, listen to the music, it promotes it all the time. Blacks are traditionally more traditional family, which is amazing why the left want to keep bringing these huge troves of Hispanics in, because they represent everything that the left hates. Most Hispanics are pro-family, are the largest Christian group in the world, besides white Americans, and a lot of white Europeans. You've also got, they're very hardworking. They oftentimes will work hideous wage because of the fact that they're trying to support a large family, which, interesting enough, when you listen to comedians like Carlos Mencia, they talk about, why do you guys have so many damn kids? Kind of think of it as attributing, like, throwing darts at a dartboard, that if we keep on having a kid that and keep on grooming in one direction, eventually one of those kids is going to hit the bullseye. In other words, there's going to be a payoff. So, for example, Carlos Mencia himself comes from a fairly large family. I think of at least five brothers and sisters, and he's the only one that's actually made a little bit of money for himself. I think his one brother has a small independent business, I think, that he started. I'm not sure, but a buddy of mine in Cincinnati turned me on to him a number of years ago. And actually, what I like about Mencia is he cracks on all races, on all ethnic groups. Doesn't matter, white, black, Hispanic, Arab. I mean, if there's a stereotype, he plays on it, and even on himself. But, you know, what's interesting about him is that in one of his shows, he said, what you guys don't understand is we betrayed a country to come here. Because he's originally from Nicaragua, El Salvador. He's either from Nicaragua or El Salvador. I forget which country it is. But he comes to the United States, you know, this, that, and here. But, you know, he brought that up. And I think that's a valid point. A lot of these people don't want to leave their home. But the problem they have is either, A, the government's so corrupt due to people like such as George Soros crashed the peso a couple of decades ago, which allowed massive corruption in the Mexican government. And now you got the drug lords who make the most cash pretty much run the whole damn show. And at the same time, the Mexican government disarmed most of the Mexican people. So the drug cartels go in and basically run the gambit and tell everybody what the hell they're going to do. And if you don't follow the game, you're going to get made an example of going back to Mayan times, and you're going to be sacrificed on a temple, or your head's going to be on a spike. Make an example out of you. I mean, it's classic mafia tactics. It's terrible what's going on in Mexico. It's sad, too, because most Mexican people aren't like that, which is wrong because they're stereotyped being a bunch of thug killers and everything else. Not all of them are like that, and it's bullshit. It really is. It's against the Christian values. Drug lords are running around running the damn show, and all the Mexican government people do is they just keep electing each other. They have a small collective, and all they do is they change their nameplates every so many years. I mean, it's completely obvious what's going on down there, you know? When you got someone like Felipe Calderon coming up here and coming to my Congress and telling my Congress that we should throw out the Second Amendment and turn in our guns to our government, who the fuck are you, Calderon? Go to hell back to your country, to your bullshit, and you continue to disarm your people. How dare you come into my country and say we should disarm? What we should have done was allow guns in the goddamn Congress. We all whip the fucker out, whip the damn, even if it's a six-shooter sticking his face, I think it's time for you to leave, sir. And our best John Wayne and Gary Cooper impersonation. Seriously, you come into my sovereign country and tell me how to live my fucking government? Fuck you. I mean, that's what it's coming down to, man. These government officials keep on pushing all this shit, telling us that our kids can't have, if they use their fingers to make an image of a gun with their fingers, they get expelled from school. Bringing a brown bag to school is racist. What kind of crackamamie shit's going on here, man? I mean, really, they want to bitch about girls wearing yoga pants. Yeah, that's distracting. I mean, they started bitching about stuff when I was in school about, chicks wearing spaghetti strap tops or half shirts or whatever the case may be, because it's distracting, You got attractive young 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old girl in there showing all her goodies and shit. You're not going to be learning much in class. You're going to be fantasizing. I mean, that's what teenage boys do, But to sit there and start doing this stuff, I mean, it's horseshit. I mean, prime example, in the Dayton public schools, there was Patterson High School in downtown Dayton, which is the worst place to put a high school in the first place, and it was majority black, okay? But what's interesting enough is they had so many criminal elements going on in that thing. They had gangs. Some of these guys would actually literally commit crimes inside the goddamn hallways. I heard stories about, God forbid, a chick should be fairly attractive and wear a miniskirt to school. That was inviting a rape. I mean, seriously, I heard at least 15 documented cases in my junior year alone where two cases in particular, right out there and open in front of everybody, these black guys grabbed this girl and basically kind of half-forced them into their own locker, full-size locker, okay, and pretty much started yanking all their at all their shit and basically raped them right there in the damn hallway. And at least 30 or 40 other people were cheering them on. And the teachers were powerless to do anything about it. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Or they go and beat the shit out of each other with a starter jacket or a new pair of Jordans. Or we heard stories that the girls couldn't even go to the bathroom because the guys would walk into the damn men's room and climb over the damn walls to watch them use the restroom. I mean, what type of animalistic shit that we've got going on here? Anyone who ever went to school during my day in the 80s and early 90s, let me tell you what, man, you pull shenanigans like that, not only did you get paddled, you probably got your ass whipped from fellow kids at school, okay? But then when you come home, you got to face your folks, man, providing you still had a full family, because they promote single mother homes everywhere, God forbid. I mean, it's a dumbest coming mentality that women, as soon as they get pregnant, they have this mentality that they are entitled to entitlement, and they will not only go after the father and just bludgeon the guy over the head for fucking money, but then they expect the state to provide them everything they need, whether it's socially housing, food stamps, education, all this shit. At least, if anything, Bill Clinton put an end to that for a while, limiting welfare benefits to 2 years. I mean, just because you have a kid doesn't mean you get freebies. That's bullshit. It takes two to tango. If you're dumb enough to open your freaking legs for a lick and a promise, Aerosmith sings about and shit, then you get what's coming to you. I mean, most of these guys aren't going to be smart enough to take precautions, Either they have been taught better or they just don't give a shit. And they're going to treat you like a trailer trash because of the fact that, hey, you gave in, A lot of guys have more respect for a girl who says no and not necessarily flaunts it, but just doesn't provoke it. I mean, I remember girls, I had the hots for them in grade school and shit and meeting them in the high school and stuff. I always respected them because, they weren't like that, Some girls that hung around a group I thought were quite popular, turns out it was the other way around. They were actually the good girls, and their shadows who you thought nobody was even paying attention to was the complete whore behind the bleachers. I mean, some crazy shit that's going on here. But what I'm leading to is that morality in this country has totally gone down the tubes. I mean, when you've got a lot of musical artists over the last 50 years that have broken the social barriers on many things, and even though they try to put restraints on it at the time, it's totally compounded one thing after another, so now almost nothing, no old boss. So it doesn't surprise me when somebody wants to bitch and moan about some musical artists having questionable lyrics or even questionable pictures on their album covers. You know what I mean? This is where parents are supposed to step in and look and see what the hell their kids are listening to. It's like the biggest bitch in the 80s was that when they put a sticker on a record, yeah, that's all fine and good if you actually have parents to take the time to see what the hell they're buying for their kids. And some record stores didn't give a shit. They would still sell explicit record albums to teenagers, you know, like Two Live Crew and NWA. They didn't give a shit. They're making money hand over fist. You know, and at the same time, these guys are laughing all the way to the bank. Public Enemy, most of their lyrics are all pro-black nationalists. They hate white people and this, that, and the other. But who was the largest buying audience? 95% of Public Enemy's listening audience are white suburban kids. Now, I remember when NWA first came out, 1988, they were the ones that helped crack the glass ceiling as far as expanding what was considered acceptable and what's not acceptable in the music medium, okay? You had a lot of artists begin before that, you know? For example, obviously, rock and roll started in the 50s. You had acts like Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Fats Domino, who were stretching the lines, especially Little Richard, but it was still cool, even though they were called race records back then when they were trying to describe black music and this rock and roll thing that was coming up. By 1905, you had Elvis Presley tapping in all this stuff, which a lot of blacks feel that he stole from the black people and everything else, which is all fine and good, you know. I mean, I have a CD from the early 1920s when they first started recording a lot of the blues standards that you hear today, such as Big Mama Thornton doing Black Dog, or I'm sorry, Hound Dog. You had, a lot of the standards that you hear many blues artists and rock artists they cover, such as Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. I forget who the original name of that artist is. I don't have the CD in front of me. It's actually my rack in the next room. But I remember Rod Stewart did a real good version of that in 1988 on his Out of Order album, you know. But a lot of artists had covered that song for years. So blues and stuff and rock and roll in the 1950s really affected the British when it started traveling over there. Hence the Beatles. The Beatles, if you ever listen to the Star Club recording sessions that they did in the early 60s, I think it was in 62, they were all traditional rock and roll covers. Many of those songs ended up on the first four albums. And, except for Hard Day's Night. Hard Day's Night was the first one, completely all original Beatles stuff. But otherwise, their first four other studio albums had many of the covers that they had covered in the Star Club sessions. That's how they cut their teeth out of playing a lot of this good stuff. In 1976, when John Lennon was on a television appearance and Chuck Berry come on stage, because he always said, if they didn't call rock and roll, they should have called Chuck Berry. I mean, that was his idol. In 1976, when he was on that TV program, he turned his back to the audience and turned his face to Chuck Berry. I mean, he was playing it with his idol. I mean, how many musicians say, hell yeah, do they get to play with my freaking idol? That'd be like me playing with Paul Stanley or something, or, you know, or many other artists that I admire and shit if I was a musician and just say, fuck yeah, dude, I'm on the same stage with Paul fucking Stanley or something. Fuck the camera. Dude, I'm just going to be jamming because that's the moment in my life that, to me, would be the peak of my musical ability. The fact that one of my favorite all-time musicians is who I'm playing with, you know. Or if I was an actor and I was acting with one of my favorite all-time childhood actors, William Shatner or something, you know. I mean, I think that'd be cool as shit. I can respect it and say, get a little bit past the star struckness. I've met many rock stars over the years. That I grew up with. I booked some of these artists. Met them in clubs when they were considered has-beens. You know, when they were big when I was growing up, 10 years later, they're playing McGuffey's House of Draft. You know, many of the rockers that I met over the years are actually cool as shit. I mean, Janie Lane, I met him twice in 1995. Really cool guy. up at Alvarez Avila in Columbus and stuff. Never much of a prick at all. I mean, he's a real nice guy. Kip Winger, think he's a prima donna? Not at all, dude. Real cool, level guy. You could sit there and just shoot the shit with him. Brett Michaels, face value guy, man. He's literally the rocker next door that you can sit down and crack a beer with and shoot the shit. But they won't let him because his voice will be shit by tomorrow, you know, because he just likes talking to people and just talking about life. He's a normal dude, you know. I mean, there's many rockers out there. I met a few pricks, a few guys that still think they're somebody. You know, I heard a story a number of years ago from a friend of mine who met Tom Kiefer. Basically come out before a gig and says, "Hey, who wants to sleep with me tonight?" Well, dude, you just kind of ruin the magic, you know what I mean? I mean, what kind of bullshit is that? I mean, and that's just totally, that's like Kiss when they took off the makeup, you know, in a way. He's like, dude, you're in the magic. You don't want to know who's behind the makeup. It's part of the fantasy, you know? And basically, it's a comic book character rock star come to life. So it's some interesting stuff here. But when you look how much music has totally broken down with social standards in this country, you almost see it decade by decade. And just some of the shit, and even some of the left-wing artists of the in the 60s. Some of the shit they wrote about, it's just complete shit. I mean, I think one of the worst left-wing artists out there is Neil Young. My God, you ever listen to some of his shit? Not only is it, I don't think he's that good of a musician. He's a modern songwriter in his own right. Bob Dylan, the guy can't sing with a shit. Good songwriter, though, because I would say this. Anyone who covers a Bob Dylan song, wow. Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Healey, anybody but Bob Dylan playing his own music, man, does a really good version of it. You know, I mean, Dylan, I think, would probably be, he'd make a shitload of money just being a songwriter in his own right. I mean, there's a lot of bands out there that have major people write this stuff. I mean, a lot of big names like Desmond Child or Holly Knight or even Michael Bolton. Michael Bolton's actually a pretty good contemporary songwriter in his own right. So, you know, interesting stuff. But we see how much this shit is just totally broken down social standards. And, I mean, and here's the worst part of it. And I brought this up before. Things that we consider acceptable in rock and roll now may be considered dangerous to the New World Order or this new Big Brother government we have. You know, the Beatles have been accredited for up and bringing down the Soviet Union because there were so many different ways in which their music was smuggled into the USSR that to the point where the KGB had a pretty good idea how to intercept a lot of shit. But the bottom line is the music was still smuggled in and gave people hope to listen, who listened to the Beatles. So when McCartney 5 played Red Square, what was it 2005, I think it was? It was a major feat because of the fact that band that helped bring down that major communist and that human prison over there. One of my guests on my show, Harold Ziegler, who was an East Bloc survivor there in East Germany, talked about how he was hooking up antennas and stuff to try to capture signals that were beamed in from the West. And whether it was music or Catholic mass programs, whatever the case may be, that was the only way they had a source of information because there was this complete media blockout in East Germany because the Stasi would make sure that no one listened to this shit. Last thing they want is Western thought corrupting up their inmates, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's an interesting point. So, nevertheless, it does make you wonder. Now, David Icke has done extensive commentary on how the Zionists have gotten complete control of the music industry in half a decade and how they use the music through, and we've seen the Super Bowl halftime shows. The amount of Illuminati influence in halftime shows is incredible. The last couple of years has been really obvious. Even Bruno Mars is known to be affiliated with the Illuminati, which sucks because I think he's one of the most talented newer stars that I've seen the last few years, and I really enjoy a lot of his music. But I would think twice about going and buying a concert ticket, you know what I mean? Madonna last year or 2 years ago with her Baphomet influence costume and poses that she did on the stage and this, that, and the other. I mean, you expect anything else from Madge? I mean, she's always been in the shit, whether she's got road construction cones for breasts. I mean, Jesus Christ, man. How much more ideas can she come up with to really push the envelope? I think she's pretty much done. She really is. She's done. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The last real large entertainer that we're ever going to see is Britney Spears. She's the last real, true, large entertainment. No one is ever going to reach the scale as she has. She's like the fourth or fifth most well-paid woman in entertainment. And her records sell well. What's interesting about Britney is that she has a fairly short shelf life on her albums. As long as the singles keep coming out that are fairly good, the album will last a good 6 months and will somewhat sustain itself and then drops off pretty quickly. Now, I personally think her Blackout album is definitely her peak album, and her next best album is 2001's Britney album. Because the last records that she's done in the last few years have really been terrible. Femme Fatale, the only two good songs on there were the singles. So she's gone downhill there, too. And her latest record, Britney Jean, correct what she says, it's for the fans. It's not really for the general public. If you listen to the album at all, it's definitely, if you're a Britney fan, you can groove on it. There's only one good song on there that's for mass consumption, and that's really to get people excited about the record, and that's Work Bitch. And that's a solid, good, up-pump tempo dance tune with a lot of sass and attitude that sets the tone of the record. But for the most part, it drops off pretty quick. I'm a big fan of opening songs, and I think they set the tone for everything. So, needless to say, we see what's going on with the division in this country. But again, using tribalism with sports teams, which also helps to pigeonhole you into a certain region or demographic, because of the fact that if you're a Bengals fan, you must be from Southwest Ohio, Northern Kentucky, or Southeastern Indiana. You know, I mean, so pretty much, and then what amazes me, these guys spend hundreds of dollars on a freaking jersey of some other player. If you're going to have a jersey, man, have it with a number of your choice and your freaking name on it, you know? I got some ones I made here for my local Springville Panthers. It's got my name and a number of my choice on it. You know, it's got my last name, Thomas, and it says 69 on the back as a joke. I don't give a shit. If it offends someone, great, I did my job, you know? But, I mean, that's just me. I support my local high school sports team, showing a little local color, but I don't sit there and go to their games every single time. I go to one or two, you know, just to show support. You know, being somewhat of a public figure, I have to be visual like that because of the fact that I don't want to sit there and people point fingers at me and say, well, we never see you at games or never see you tweet things for the Bora Bora crew, whatever the case may be. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, they will find every little thing and nitpick at you for not doing this. But here's something interesting that happened today. And then we're going to the station break, and then I'll go into the SPLC a little bit with a clip from InfoWars from last week, a segment called Prophets of Hate. This may have been April Fool's joke, but we saw some interesting things on the local Springboro news feed today that really made me wonder if it was an April Fool's joke or if it was actually coming to fruition. If it is, this is very concerning. Here in Springboro, somehow we got hoodwinked a few years back to have a new football field built and funded by Miami Valley Hospital. And this is called Care Flight Field, okay? It was a $22 million project that the school system got hoodwinked into, and so the taxpayers in Springboro had to pay this damn thing. $22 million for this building, all the bleachers, and the field, fairly good damn size. It's regulation-sized football field, and then also for soccer and whatever, okay? But the bottom line is $22 million of our hard-earned funds is put into a bond, you know, assuming and basically paid this damn thing off. Now, the thing is that Miami Valley Hospital pays, I think if I remember correctly from what Kelly Coles told me, it's about $1 million a year for 22 years that they have that they pay this back. Now, here's something that concerns me. They've been paying this now for 5, 7, 8 years, something like that. Here's something that's really going to bother me. Now that Obamacare is kicking in and it's going to come to full fruition within another year or two, guaranteed, because these goddamn Republicans won't get off their ass to do something about it. They just talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. What a shocker, huh? Is that we're indebted to all this shit. And if And if Obamacare kicks in and they're going to start saving money, they're going to start cutting staff, cutting pay, and they're going to find cutting corners everywhere possible. That may mean they may even cut down their payments of this facility from $1 million a year to $500,000 a year because nobody's going to be able to pay for medical care. It's going to go through the frickin' roof, 3, 4, 5 times what you're normally going to pay. Over by all the internationalists and insurance companies, a lot of them coming out of Indiana. This is very concerning on multiple levels. The one thing is you really got to ask the question is that the hoax was today, there was twofold. One is that there was rumor that former Ohio State Buckeyes coach Jim Tressler was being brought in, and they were fabricating a whole new position for this guy, an assistant director of athletic recruiter, okay? Okay, my first question is, wasn't this guy kicked off the Buckeyes for some reason? Wasn't there a scandal or something? The guy was with them, a Big Ten team, for 10 years, and he got kicked off in the middle of the damn season, if I remember correctly, or three-fourths of the way. I don't remember exactly what happened. Maybe someone could call in and tell me. I haven't had time to look up on Wikipedia because I really don't care. But, I mean, the thing that really bothers me is, why would coach be coming here? Now, I guess from my understanding, he's got some sort of position with the Indianapolis Colts, and he's doing that. But you know this guy's going to command at least a $55,000 salary, at least, just because of his status, okay? So here's the situation for you. Kelly Coles is our last school board president, helped bring us out from a $20 million deficit to initially a $6 million surplus due to her budget cuts and her contract rearranging it basically added up to a peak of $10 million surplus budget we have here at Spring Grove Schools, okay? What happens? Well, we had two conservatives run, but they, for whatever reason, they didn't get much traction. And one of the other incumbents that was in there was a conservative and dropped out. So we had three cultural Marxists running on the school board and already had a huge lead ahead of us, already had a swollen bank account, swag, signs, stickers, you name it. They had the whole goddamn gamut coming, okay? These guys are cultural Marxists. One of them was a former high school principal for Springboro High School who flubbed up on many number of things and basically after a bad divorce begged and pleaded the school board to renew his contract at least once so he could get most of his retirement in, okay? Obviously, his wife left him for a reason because the guy's a freaking asshole, okay? And then you have one guy who's a former teacher for 30-some-odd-plus years, former union member, so that's a conflict of interest. And you have one guy who works at a damn morgue, and the guy has the charisma of a damp rag, okay? I mean, complete cockamamie shit that's going on here. And what's the first thing to do as soon as they got sworn in? They were going to spend $5,800 of our money to go back to the Ohio School Board Association group, which is a completely compromised group now, to take marching orders from them during their contestant race, the candidate race, that basically they had no problem in rejoining that group and basically were already planning on spending money. They had already had shit earmarked, and they're ready to spend. They did not want Springboro School to stand up on its own and be above the fray. They wanted to make damn sure that they basically ended up like everybody else, which says a lot about the group in general. So that should make you wonder on many levels what the hell's going on here. So let's just say, let's continue this thing we heard on the message board this morning. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Jim Tressler was coming to the school district. You know you're looking at $55,000 at least in pay for this guy a year, okay? Then there was a rumor going around that the last heir of Wrigley Chewing Gum was spreading like $45 million over four different schools in the area, maybe throughout the state, but at least Springboro was one of them, okay? That they were going to purchase Care Flat Field. They were going to call it Juicy Fruit Field, is that it? Something like that, okay? I'm like, are you kidding me? And then the shtick was they were going to paint all the bleachers bright yellow. The question about this is the school's colors are a navy blue, more or less a navy blue, similar to the same color of Scotland's St. Andrew's flag, okay? Are you shitting me? They're going to call it Juicy Fruit Field? Okay, this is scary because you know why? Juicy Fruit commercials, if you remember, were banned from TV because the lyrics were considered very sexually explicit. Remember the lyrics? Make us pull it out. The taste is going to move you when you pop it in your mouth. Juicy Fruit is going to move you. Juicy Fruit, the taste is soft, it gets right through you. I mean, the lyrics are considered so explicit that they actually had to take it off the air. So, I don't know if this is an April Fool's joke, off the Christ it is, that it is. But the thing that makes you wonder is, if you've got this type of shit going on, here's a group that cannot wait to spend the money that we spent 4 long years to a conservative school board to save the damn money on, okay? I mean, it's a scary thought. I mean, these guys are spend. They would spend more money on athletics and not on education, and these guys are already not only embracing, but they're already in the process of getting Common Core totally put into the damn school system. I mean, Christ, we were in the process of trying to restore cursive writing, at least in the school, because the state took it out 8 years ago. Give me horse shit. So this should make everybody wonder what the hell is going on. I cannot express this enough. You want to get involved in your local governments, you want to take this country back, you've got to go to your school board meetings every time they have them, you need to go to your city council meetings, and run for central committee, even if it's the Democrat or the GOP, because it's the only way we're going to take this country back is at the local level. And if you don't, if you get on city council, start questioning Gen 21. Look how it's integrated into your city charters. That's the only way we're going to take this goddamn country back is we're really going to have to really grab the horse by the reins and tell it to go, whoa, because if not, that horse is going to run us right off the damn track and off the cliff. I'm telling you, man, it's going to get worse before it gets better. All good, all for evil to prevail is good men to do nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay, I'm getting off my little rant here. I'm going to go to some commercials here on the top of the hour. Again, call in at 347-855-8301. And we're going to come back, talk about the SPLC and this little clip from InfoWars from last week, which I think really says a lot. And we'll go from there. So come back, Shirley, right after these messages.
Hi, friends. When it comes to reaching your audience, the best approach is in person. If you have a band, business, or charity event, you want to reach people in the best ways and venues possible. If you're touring in the Midwest, you need DMI Promotions. Their friendly staff is ready, willing, and able to assist you in venue locations and event promotions to make your show or event successful. Contact Tori Webb at 515-865-4463. Or toriwebdmi@gmail.com. DMI Promotions, your Midwest promotional team and proud sponsor of Truth Emerges Radio.
The Human Torch is tonight at Bangalore.
I am your host, the mouth, rapping and scratching at you.
I come to bring the
The Human Torch.
But most of all, Mr. President, thank you for arousing the sleeping, silent majority, because we have been asleep too long.
I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Do you believe there should be a new independent investigation of 9/11?
Would it make any difference?
Well, let me just ask you the question. Do you think there should be an investigation?
And I'm asking you one. Would it make any difference?
Wait! We can't stop here. This is bad country.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Last Voice for Liberty. Monday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Truth Emerges Radio Network.
People sit there and go, hey, Lee, you think that everything's a conspiracy. Well, you know what? It kind of is. The more and more I dig, the more I...
You cannot rationalize and justify the abuse of liberty for the pretense that on occasion you might catch a criminal.
All right, everybody there in Radio Land. This is the Sonny Thomas Show here on the Truth Emerges Radio Network.
I am known to be very concerned about the privacy of all Americans and am tenacious in protecting the privacy of everyone.
The march in D.C. with Ron Paul back in 2008, I was hobnobbing with liberals from Michigan. That's almost like a Southerner hanging with a Yankee. And one of the things that I find totally egregious is a certain part of the justice system that are designed to totally ostracize people.
What if the federal government decided what time of day it is? What if the federal government made it a law that you had to change every clock in your house whenever it told you to do so?
Speaking of thing over, let's go on DVD, because I know some people are still watching. I've seen many cases where literally they say, well, we got a 90-day probation period, 89th day, you're out the door. So they're
right.
Essentially a furnace into indentured service, and I think that's totally wrong.
What if the government decided whom to enrich and whom to keep poor?
The Sonny Thomas Show, Thursday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Truth Emerges Radio Network.
Patriotic people that are saying, you know what, I've had enough of the CES, and I'm standing up and saying something about it.
It's a House of Blues break.
Hey, sometimes it's a whole lot easier listening to the blues than attempting to try to define it. According to blues guitarist Eric Girardi, the blues means so much to so many different people that it's just hard to define exactly what it is that makes this music so appealing.
But some people, it has such a profound effect. I really don't know, but all I know is the first time my dad threw me on my bed and made me listen to Jimmy Reed, and he scratched my Ozzy Osbourne record in the process and said, son, time we had a talk, listen to this. It had a profound effect on me, and I just, whenever I picked up a guitar, that's what would come out. I'd be playing Baby What You Want Me to Do no matter what I wanted to play. It just kept coming out. So let's just not question it, and let's just be happy that it's there, I suppose.
Take a look at your boy, take a look at your boy.
much.
Right here, back on the True Train, and it's Sonny Thomas sitting in for Liberty Lisa tonight, and we're blowing down the track as fast as we can, 100 miles per minute. So, pretty good stuff, but you managed to make some process. Just to let you know, some of the music we played in the beginning of the show, we had Sons of Liberty with The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is off the Brush Fires of the Mind album, which is a complete anti-New World Order, anti-globalist album featuring, the lead guy from Heist to Earth, his name John Cooper, I think it is. He's also come out with a second album recently as well, so definitely look up sonsofliberty.net, and the hyphens between these words. It's sons-of-liberty.net, and I do believe you can still download a low-res version of it for free, or you pay $8 and you get the full version download, and interesting stuff that's mixed in there as well. So, and that was Gary Moore featuring Phil Lynott, both formerly of Thin Lizzy and both now late. Gary Moore just died a couple of years ago. Excellent blues rock guitarist in his own right. And Phil Lynott had died from heroin abuse in January of 1986. Thin Lizzy is still ranked as one of the, is definitely the greatest Irish rock band, and also opened the doors for many other Irish rock bands since, such as U2 and the Cranberries and a few others. So, but Thin Lizzy was the first band to really break that. So Philip Lynott is considered the godfather of Irish rock. So again, now make sure you tune in my show on Thursday, because we're going to be celebrating Tartan Day a little bit early. Tartan Day is on April the 6th, and we got several guests who are going to talk about not only the music, but some of the culture and the history of the country of Scotland. And we're going to also talk about their independence referendum that they have on September the 18th. And there's going to be some very interesting issues there. My article on the critique of Scotland and what they're already doing before they're even independent, which may lose them the momentum to become free and independent from the English heel, is featured on my Facebook page, facebook.com/CFCCOhio, under the notes section, titled Scotland Puts the Cart Before the Horse Before Independence. But it was just printed this week in the local Springbow Star Press, slightly slimmed down version due to room in the paper, but nevertheless the main sentiment of the article is still in place. So real quick, I'm going to play two quick clips. One's quick, one's a bit longer. But we're going to talk about some issues here. I'm currently running for office myself. I'm running for re-election, not consecutively, but re-election for my local county central committee here in Warren County. And I'm also took an extra leap, and I'm running for state central committee, both for the GOP. I've seen firsthand within the Central Committee that one person does make a difference. So if you are of a libertarian mindset, you are a Ron Paul supporter, we can take over your local Central Committees and GOPs. Ron Paul supporters control the entire Iowa GOP. So we want to keep that as long as possible, especially with the straw polls coming along, because we saw Ron Paul was screwed out of his victory, which should have been obvious, by Michelle Bachmann. So we wanted to make sure that no longer is a trend, that is actually a fluke, and it will never be repeated again. So we need to bring the GOP to its roots and to its true values of acknowledging the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, and to stop subverting it and doing all sorts of other things that are against the American people, and hold all levels of government accountable, from the federal government all the way down to your local school district. Number to call in, 347-855-8301. That's 347-855-8301. My websites are sonnythomas.com, springboroughteaparty.com, or.org, cfccohio.org, and my music website, thehmd.com. That's thehmd.com. Okay, we got respect to Twitter and YouTube accounts to go with those websites as well. Real quick, I'm going to play two quick clips. I think a lot of the talking points in my speech from last Monday night at the Candidates Forum really hit the bone about why we need to really hold the GOP accountable on multiple levels of government. Now I'm going to play this 5-minute clip from a speech that I did at a candidates forum for the Warren County Republican Women's Club. I missed the first 45 seconds of the clip where I introduced myself, and I mentioned that the Constitution was the greatest human document ever fabricated, especially since Magna Carta. And I go into how the secondary document was the Bill of Rights. So here's the first clip I'm going to play from highlights from that speech, and then we're going to talk about the SPLC and the InfoWars nightly news segment, Prophets of Hate. So here's my talking points here from that speech last Monday night.
Yes, I'm Cy Thomas at the Midwest Market Street, and I just wanted to say that this forum is really the opportunity to discuss the topic of concealed carry in human school system. Given another shooting in California today, if we had, there are many teachers who are already qualified for concealed carry through various programs through the state of Ohio, and if anything, we should realize.
Hang on a second, I'm having some technical difficulties here. That was the wrong one. And the second backup thing to that was the Bill of Rights, which told the government what it can't do. Okay. And what we're seeing the government doing everything to the contrary. So, real quick, I wanted to, let's actually look at the definition of what republic is. According to dictionary.com, it's a state which the supreme power rests in the body of citizens, entitled to vote, and is exercised by representatives chosen directly or indirectly by them. Not direct democracy, like a lot of these welfare recipients want to have. And the Democrats are always capitulating and always candidates for the poor and the downtrodden and say, hey, we can get this for you by taking money from Warren County and giving it to them. Did they earn it? No, they did not. My mom spent 25 years in section housing management. Let me tell you what, she would tell you stories of the taxpayer that just turned your stomach inside out on how it's abused, on how the women are abused by drug-dealing men, and how some of the police officers won't even bother going into those areas because they're just so riddled with drugs and drug dealers. So, one of the things that I see, and I talk to most people, just everyday people, blue-collar guys, much of us don't have alphabet suits for, you know, degrees or anything like that. They have a problem with Republican brand name. They don't trust them much. And we see leadership in Congress such as John Boehner. Every time he goes nose-to-nose with Obama, Obama knows he just has to hold out and Boehner will capitulate. Yeah. And we can't have that type of leadership in Congress, and certainly not in the great sovereign state of Ohio. We are states, not zip codes within the federal government. And we need to remind them that every day. Madison and Jefferson proved this with the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, that we've given power to the federal government from the states. When they abuse that power, we take it back. We take it back. And we're doing that with nullification. People are finally starting to understand what nullification is all about. We see states such as South Carolina getting ready to abolish Obamacare through nullification through its entirety. They're one step ahead of us. We have states that have the gold and silver as legitimate currency within those states. They're becoming fiscally sound because they are able to have gold and silver be equal exchange between their citizens, like it should be. So these are some of the things that I'm standing up for because I want to see candidates, and I've heard many of you speak tonight, I want to see candidates that believe in the American dream. They believe that just blue-collar people like you and I can step up and say, you know what, I don't like the way this is going. I've got kids. I want to make sure they have a chance for a future. And I do that because I feel that there may not be a job for them in the future. And I want to make sure Warren County is an excellent place to start for the simple fact that we have excellent hearts and hardworking hands in this party that do it every single day in the state. I see it every day. I read the newsletters from many of you. And I want to make sure that when we have an opportunity, State Central Committee, to appoint somebody, someone that actually stands up and says, this is what I'm going to do, and do it. I saw it in the Warren County Central Committee when we had between McGarry and Fornshell. We had to make a choice. And I tell you what, I sat down with Fornshell at lunch one day, and he told me exactly what he wanted to do. And I have to give him credit. 75% of everything he told me, he's accomplished. So I feel my vote wasn't wasted. So when I list my voting record for my constituents to see, I make a plan to see who I voted for, who I did, and why. And I want to do the same thing on the state level because I feel that some of the Republican leadership has gone astray.
And when they do go astray, we need to hold them to account. And those that actually stood up to stop the expansion of government, such as Ron Madd, we need to endorse him for his candidacy and not throw them under the bus.
Right.
They stood up to make us small government, not just smaller government. And this is the basic consensus I hear from everybody I talk to every day in the workplace. They don't trust Republicans because if they say one thing, they get in office to do another. And I know many of you people who have been elected in office, I've seen your reports, I've seen your voting records, you have done a fantastic job. Sheriff Sims has done an excellent job as sheriff. He's done excellent work trying to expand the jails, but at the same time, make it fair for people to get out of the system. And we need to do that by lowering our taxes, eliminating the state debt, and making sure we put people in positions of power that listen to what we, the people, say. So like I said, I'm looking for your vote, and I want to make sure that when I go there, you know you got strict constitutionalist Jeffersonian Republican that's going to stand up there and say, candidate A, candidate B, what's the difference between the two? I will make the best educated voice possible. Thank you.
Okay, so you can see my main talking points there. And when I say specifically, you should see the look on some of the faces when I said specifically that you're going to have a, especially in front of all these neocons and rhinos, that you were going to have a strict constitutionalist and a Jeffersonian Republican who's going to be up there fighting for you. I mean, most of the advertisements you see, for example, State Senator Shannon Jones, she made sure she exited before my speech. It's clearly obvious. She's a vampire. She's afraid to see the light, okay? She is a neocon in the purest sense of the word. She does general conservative stuff to make sure her constituency is more likely going to vote for her. I mean, now, Kelly Coles is right up against her, but she didn't have a lot of time to mount a proper campaign to attack her for state senator at all times. She was actually being pushed as a possible candidate for lieutenant governor against John Kasich and Mary Taylor, but situations came up and they decided to jump out of that. But actually, I talked to her one night and said she should run for Senate, even if it's in the next term. She thought, take that idea and run with it. So interesting, interesting situation there. But and run for office, please. Anyone out there listening to my voice, run for office. You may lose a couple times, but this is how you learn things. Look at Christine O'Donnell. She's ran, what, 3-4 times for Senate and landed flat on her nose. And the last time, she won the freaking primary, man. She won the primary, and she lost in the general election. But, man, she got a shitload of donations across the country. I supported her wholeheartedly for the most part. But after she lost, I saw her commentary during the debates and clearly saw that she was showing her neoconness, and I'd say she's more rhino. Which really may need concern. So if she were run for Senate again, she would not get my support, you know? I mean, seriously, and I even tried to get into her inner camp so I could actually talk to her directly, and nothing of the sort. So, you know, and the media went after her big time on a myriad of issues. And the bottom line was they're attacking an attractive woman who had strong conservative values and was a devout Christian and everything else, and so they had everything going for her that they loathed and love to attack than they do Sarah Palin. So you see how much they create hate and animosity towards any type of normal person who, God forbid, she might be attractive and have a brain, you know, is a complete threat to the system. So we see that type of shit going on here all the time. So what leads me to the SPLC thing I was telling you about is how they basically have made a killing off of fabricating hate groups, and in this case, out of individuals. Yours truly has been featured 3 times now, or at least 3 separate different listings on their website. My personal website lists general hate. Of course, they attacked my CFCC Ohio website because I'm the chapter director, and they attacked the CFCC in general because I'm affiliated with that conservative group. But this article clearly shows just how stupid they are and how biased they are. I had a local newspaper person named Amanda Seitz, who did an interview with me because of the fact that I showed up on the list, and she had, questioned me on it. And I mentioned to her, I said, you got to ask yourself a serious question. If they're starting to label individuals as hate groups, which I've actually heard they've got sued a couple of times over that shit, it shows you how desperate they are to keep that money machine going on. And now, recently, came to light last week, the FBI, at least publicly, have dropped the SPLC as a resource of for hate groups. It clearly showed that they just weren't buying their biased reports anymore. So there is an excellent article from InfoWars News that played the other night, about 9 minutes and 21 seconds long. But I think this sums it up, spelled P-R-O-F-I-T-S. Check this out.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has long been the think tank hatching the idea of vast right-wing conspiracies. SPLC is the source behind some of the most outrageous enemies lists being compiled by Homeland Security, fusion centers like the MIAC report, and emails and policy statements by the military. SPLC creates the boogeyman, writes the script, and Homeland passes it off to the police, who are trained to associate political speech with a threat to their personal safety. And it's not just political speech. Southern Poverty Law Center is attacking religious freedom, calling it hate. This line of attack has been promulgated within the military. The free exercise religion of those in the military is being attacked as not just hateful, but conflated with the racism of the KKK. It's an interesting comparison for the SPLC to make, since it got its start in the violent racist confrontations of the 60s. On May 20th, 1961, when a busload of black and white freedom riders arrived in Montgomery, Alabama, they were met with what Time magazine described as an idiot club-swinging mob of about 100. In this picture, we see SPLC founder Morris Deese's first client. The man on the ground with the camera getting kicked by Klansmen, that's not Morris Deese's client. This is Deese's client. Deese didn't defend the Freedom Riders who were viciously attacked, bloodied, and had their bus set on fire. Deese defended the KKK thug, the ringleader. And he got him off, in spite of it being widely reported like this article in Life magazine. And Morris Deese got paid a lot of money, $5,000, which at the time was the median family income for a year. But this is what his bio on the SPLC website says. After launching a law practice in Montgomery in 1960, he won a series of groundbreaking civil rights cases. Maybe he should amend that to say that he won For the Klan, a leg-breaking case against civil rights activists. Morris Deese would have us believe that sometime after he got Klansman Claude Henley off, sometime after he cashed the check, that he decided that he would start suing the Klan for cash instead of defending the Klan for cash. Maybe it wasn't a moral epiphany, but a financial epiphany. He could make much more money doing direct mail fundraising to the public than he could suing. Criticisms of the SPLC from the left focus on how little it does other than fundraising, how much money it hoards for its endowment, and how much money it pays multimillionaire Morris Deese. Alexander Cockburn described Deese and the SPLC this way. Ever since 1971, U.S. Postal Service mailbags have bulged with Deese's fundraising letters, scaring dollars out of the pockets of trembling liberals aghast at his lurid depictions of hate-sodden America in dire need of legal confrontation by the SPLC. Cockburn wrote in 2009 how Deese and the SPLC were spinning the election of Barack Obama. What is the arch salesman of hate-mongering, Mr. Morris Deese of the Southern Poverty Law Center, doing now? He's saying that the election of a black president proves his point. Hate is on the rise. Send money. Without skipping a beat, the mail shot moguls who year after year make money selling the notion there's been a right resurgence out there in the hinterland with massed legions of haters have used the election of a black president to say that, yes, hate is on the rise in America, ready to burst apart at the seams, with millions of extremists primed to march down Main Street draped in Klan robes, a copy of Mein Kampf tucked under one arm, and a Bible under the other. A high-profile case from 1977 shows the true nature of Morris Deese and the SPLC. After Deese and the SPLC hired Millard Farmer to defend five black men accused of murder, Farmer said Deese abruptly pulled out of the case, telling him that the case wasn't making any money for the SPLC. When Farmer refused to turn the case over to a public defender, Deese sued him for improperly spending SPLC funds. But Farmer went public, talking about how SPLC funds are really used. Any set of D's? He's the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker of the Civil Rights Movement, though I don't mean to malign Jim and Tammy Faye. The analogy couldn't be better. The SPLC is a perfect way for liberals to assuage their guilt buying indulgences from the Church of Morris Deeds. In 1996, USA Today called the SPLC the nation's richest civil rights organization, with $68 million in the bank account. It's now grown to $224 million. It's easy to see how their endowment has soared. Alexander Cockburn pointed out that in 2007 they took in $45 million but only spent $21 million, spending only half of what they took in on their proclaimed mission and pocketing the rest. And part of the expenditure was the lavish salary of multimillionaire Morris Deeds, who in 2010 was paid $350,000. How's that for Southern poverty? But ripping off guilty white liberals isn't what makes the SPLC dangerous. What makes them dangerous is when they partner with the government to intimidate dissenters, to threaten political speech, and to promote violence against those they demonize. Look at the notorious MIAC Fusion Center report, Missouri, 2009. Where every supporter of limited constitutional government, every real political opponent of Obama, was labeled as a possible terrorist, a person of interest, simply for having a bumper sticker supporting Ron Paul, Chuck Baldwin, or Bob Barr. Then there was the Huttery militia case in Michigan. The government whipped the public into a panic about militias with the help of the media using SPLC talking points.
Mark, did you know about this group?
Oh, yeah. They look to be a very small group with a very odd ideology, sort of a twist on the New World Order. Basically, like other militia groups, what they really see happening to the world is a kind of takeover of the world by some sort of one world government, a so-called New World Order.
Their alleged plot to kill a police officer and then bomb the funeral procession afterward, the opening salvo allegedly of a war against the U.S. government.
The case was thrown out by the judge, but you didn't hear much, if anything, about that. Or take Floyd Corkins, who shot up the offices of the Family Research Council because he bought into the fundraising propaganda of the SPLC that if you assert your religious liberty to resist being coerced into recognizing and subsidizing homosexual marriage, the SPLC will label you as a hate group. The real hate group is the SPLC, whose hate-mongering inspired Corkins to, quote, kill as many people as I could, then smear a Chick-fil-A sandwich on their face. And there have been multiple cases of the military repeating SPLC propaganda, labeling opposition to homosexual marriage mandates as hate, and the Founding Fathers as dangerous militia types. As we approach the one-year anniversary of the Boston bombing, we should remember how the SPLC was used to promote the idea that bombing was done by their favorite boogeyman, patriots.
It's conceivable that it was related to, in particular, this thing, Patriots Day. It celebrates, of course, the American Revolutionary War, the first shots fired at Concord and Lexington. But in the world I cover, it is really, probably most importantly, the end of the debacle in Waco, where 80 people died in a fire, and 2 years later, payback for the events in Waco, the bombing of the Oklahoma City building.
InfoWars exposed the Boston bombing as a false flag event designed to be blamed on patriots.
Sir, why were loudspeakers telling people in the audience to be calm moments before the bomb went off? Is this another false flag stage attack to take out civil liberties and promote homeland security by sticking their hands down on the camps on the streets?
No. Next question.
Why was people being told prior?
9:30 tomorrow morning.
Why were people
next
being
break?
Told prior?
2 days later, the FBI postponed, then canceled, a press conference where 100 reporters had gathered to hear about the suspects that CNN and other government spokesmen had been saying had been identified by the FBI. The FBI then waited another 24 hours before identifying two suspects that didn't fit the homegrown patriot terrorist narrative. Of course, we still haven't seen them even sitting the bags down. But we have seen the FBI murder a friend of the surviving suspect during questioning, shooting him 6 times, and once in the back of the head, execution style. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a powerful propaganda tool of the government in the war of terror. But if we can defeat them in the info war, we can stop the shooting war for which the government is preparing.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply.
Okay, so that's pretty much the not InfoWars, not in the news segment, Prophets of Hate, which clearly shows the complete hypocrisy of Morris Deese and the Southern Poverty Law Center, which oftentimes Fox News, or should I say faux news, oftentimes would cite SPLC as a talking point or as a talking source and actually come on there and make it sound like that they're someone that actually matters, which is a complete joke all in of its own. I've even heard at school board meetings, I've got some left-wing kook here named Jason Lewis, like Southern Poverty Law Center as a resource. I mean, just clearly shows how progressive this dipshit is and how I'm a complete antithesis of this guy. And I mentioned the fact that one lady who helped cancel one of the Constitution classes that we were helping set up around here, cited the SPLC as a resource. And I said specifically, if you cite the Southern Poverty Law Center as a resource, that's like me using Sean Hannity, Wikipedia, Dayton Daily News, or Bill O'Reilly as reliable resources for information. Really? That's a complete joke because they're already bit in one direction. Or like Wikipedia, it's a primer built from other people, and it's generally a left-wing group that administrates the damn thing. Because if you say anything contrary to certain individuals, like if you've got something bad to say about George W. Bush, they'll let you put it on there. If you got something bad to say about that usurper in the White House, it'll disappear in a heartbeat and it'll block your account. So, I mean, it's clearly obvious they have an agenda going on. We need to wake up and start talking to people about this shit. You'd be surprised. If you talk to people about the Fed, that's pretty much the best keyhole perspective to get people to wake up about the New World Order. Because when they start understanding the Fed and the monetary policies a little bit, it's clearly obvious. So, like I said at the beginning of the show, when I was talking about the Ukraine, the IMF, the World Bank, is ready to go in flush with cash to give them loans to indebt the people right off the bat, and then basically what they do is to help pay for the interest when they start becoming bankrupt is they have to start selling off the resources. At the same time, you've got groups such as Monsanto that's going to come in and take away the breadbasket of Europa and basically turn it into a GMO wasteland. I mean, it's the same shit they do in India. So there's all sorts of shit to throw in here, especially with Scotland. My biggest complaint is that you throw off the yoke of Great Britain to put on the slave collar of the EU. They're already planning on making the EU their currency. It's like, wait, hold on. You should be the Scottish pound, man. Go back to your traditional currencies and make it valid and have strict limitations on those on the issuance of that currency. And how dare the Scottish Parliament send letters and chastise Uganda for their anti-homosexual law when they're basically inviting all these gays to come to Scotland. Hold on a damn minute. You're bribing him. You already got caught once, Alex Salmond, for bringing immigrants into Scotland to vote for the yes vote. Okay, that's first of all, this should be egregious to any native Scot. Secondly, they just put in this draconian law to basically have a monitor until age 5 to decide whether you're a fit parent or not. And then from that point, from age 5 to 18, they'll basically have a local guy who checks in on you, make sure your kid is not overweight, is happy, this, that, and the other. I mean, what's next, dude? You're going to have to join the Yugogi at age 8 and become a Spartan warrior? I mean, who would want to have children with that type of authoritarian shit going on in that country? You're not even free from the English yoke yet, but you're already going back about 300 years on general cultural acceptance of stuff. Complete authoritarian state. Now the Scottish National Party is a left, is a far center, I should say far left center Democrat socialist group that's perpetuating this, which is all fine and good. If it's a group that has the ability to help sever the slave chain of Scotland from England, then that's cool. But they've got at least 5 to 10 years that they're going to have to worry about dealing with the transitions of going independent. Now, they get a lot of resources that belongs to Scotland naturally. They would get the northern oil drilling platforms, which is instantly going to make them fairly rich. They've got a fairly rich fishing industry. But there's a lot of natural resources that Scotland itself doesn't have. Now, it's built up some tourism thanks to Mel Gibson in the movie Braveheart. And I know that there's some interest in Robert DeBruce. So if Gibson is listening, just by chance, I'd like to see, what's his name, Angus McFadden, reprise his role as Robert DeBruce and do a biopic on Robert DeBruce, who stood up and really became a mark for his people after William Wallace was hung, drawn, and quartered. So I think that would be really cool in its own right. And I have heard that Ridley Scott is looking at doing a Robert DeBruce biopic, so I don't know who's going to be in it. I don't know how much pre-production is done. I don't know what. I know Mel Gibson's Icon Productions has done some pre-production on a Boudicca film, which Boudicca was the tribal queen during Roman times, during, I think it was after Claudius and going into Caligula's reign of imperialism, and basically her husband bequeathed like half the kingdom to Rome, and Rome said, fuck it, we'll take it all. Boudicca fought back and and just wiped out every Roman legion that she came across until the last battle. But the guy was smart. I think it was General Flavius something. I don't know if I read the story. But he basically did a Thermopylae thing where he backed himself into a funnel of trees and mountainside and basically funneled all the Brigantes into a narrow point, just like the Spartans did with the Persians. And damn near wiped out all the Brigantes and the other tribes that Boudicca had led, and then poisoned herself so she wouldn't get captured. But there was a version of this that was done a few years ago by one of the public channels there in Boston. It was at WGBH, I think it is. It's one of the titles that was called The Queen, featuring British actress Alex Kingston, also known on several seasons of ER, and most recently a couple seasons of Doctor Who. Excellent actress and stunning woman in her own right, to play Boudicca. She didn't do a bad version of it. You know, it wasn't totally historically accurate, but it was some liberal dramatizations was put in there. But nevertheless, you get the general idea where her daughters were basically raped by Roman legions, and she was whipped and flogged and had to watch this shit happen to her daughter. So, I mean, very interesting period in British history as well as Roman history, and you see some of the tactics that the Romans did to crack down on their province. But nevertheless, it's time to wake up because this shit's going to happen, man. It's going to happen in the worst way possible. So we need to start really start focusing on history. Read up on classical history, read up on every major battle, and not just the stuff in the West. Don't focus on Egypt, Israel, Greece, Rome, and then the Dark Ages, and then the Renaissance. You need to focus on other things that happened in the world at the same time. The Mayas, the Incas, you also had to focus on Thailand was a very powerful empire today. Various kingdoms in China were light years ahead in cultural achievements above the Egyptians. So, I mean, we have to make sure that we understand history or we're doomed to repeat it. And if there's two books you really should probably focus on to understanding what the globalists think, is Machiavelli's The Prince and Sun Tzu's The Art of War. If you know those books cover to cover, you'll understand how the globalists think and their tactics. Then you can start reading other books such as Plato's Republic, Cicero's On Duties, and various works by Voltaire, Nietzsche, and some of these other psychobabble philosophers who actually got an idea on how to fine tweak some of this shit. And then going into Engels and Marx's books or on the Communist Manifesto, and then start getting into left-wing stuff such as the Feminine Mystique and some of these other groups, or Marcuse's book, The Authoritarian, what was the rest of the name of that book? Anyways, it pretty much helped create the hippie. So there's a lot of good programs out there explaining this stuff, and you understand cultural Marxism, and then you start seeing the pictures and how groups like NWA, Beatles in some ways, Two Live Crew, Madonna, Miley Cyrus, and all these things that basically help bring down morality in this country and making the things that are acceptable. And this is the reason why this country is almost on its knees, because of the fact that things that never would happen in my parents' day. I mean, it was a scandal if a neighborhood girl that you went to school with got pregnant. I mean, she was seen everything but a white woman. I mean, she's basically a harlot. So these are things that need to be addressed, because nowadays it's like as soon as your daughter starts getting her woman parts even starting, they're already expecting, what? You mean she's not knocked up yet? What? I mean, what type of shit is that, man? Christ, your child can't even have a childhood now because she's afraid to offend somebody, be politically incorrect, or all these black students think they have a right to go and get whatever they want from any female student, especially from white girls. And I've seen cases where white girls will say they start dating a black guy, and she didn't give in to his demands. They go and beat the shit out of her because of the fact that she wouldn't give him none. I mean, I hear these stories all the time that you don't see on the major newspapers because they won't talk about it. They purposely will not discuss black crime. And even the creative cops has admitted that they show more white crime than the black crime that they film, because of the fact they want to try to focus on white trash all the time and not the true statistics on how blacks not only rob and pillage their own people, but anyone else around them. And we saw during the riots in L.A., they were going into the Korean neighborhoods to burn down their stores, and the Koreans were armed and said, fuck you, get the hell out of here, and shot whoever tried to come in there with the Molotov cocktail. And rightly so. Good job for the Koreans standing up for their property rights, man. I mean, it's like that and anything. It's like Reginald Denny was pulled out of his truck and savaged. They didn't beat him because they didn't like his truck. They beat him because he was white. I mean, it's horse shit. You know, and really, O.J. Simpson got off because Mark Furman was basically caught as a racist, totally fabricating evidence against him. So I still think O.J.'s guilty as hell. But because if the cop got caught messing tampering with evidence, you know, O.J. got off. Some people think he got his rewards because he got caught trying to steal his own property back that was stolen from him. Well, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, right? But, you know, if this... the guy's a complete wash. The dude's broke. I mean, he has nothing. I mean, I still think he's guilty as fuck. I really do. I mean, that's just my opinion. Michael Jackson, I had a lot of reservations the first time when he got accused of messing around with little kids, you know, because the guy's a kid himself. He had a very harsh upbringing by his father. Was beaten a lot. And the song Ben is about a little mouse that was in their house that he would feed, and it was like his only friend he would talk to until his dad put out a mouse trap and killed him. That's what the song Ben is about. But Michael Jackson, for the most part, was still a kid. That's why he gravitated towards children a lot, because he thought his childhood was robbed from him. And a lot of these child stars would tell you that. The shit's robbed from him. He didn't want him to grow up too fast. Or a lot of them, like Corey Haim. You know, he was the coke kid by the time he was 15 years old, for Christ's sake. I mean, you hear stories all the time about this shit. You know, I mean, it's really egregious what goes on and what's considered acceptable these days. It's really sad. So anyway. Okay, so we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. I want to thank, again, Liberty Lisa for letting me fill in for her again on her show tonight and talk about different things. Like I said, I had stuff already geared up for my show on Thursday, so I'll just be kind of grappling at leftover topics. But things that were sticking in the back of my head, I think need to be brought up, because the social engineers have done a very good job dividing us on race, creed, religion, even types of food we freaking eat, man. If you eat certain kinds of food now, you're considered a racist. I mean, you question the thing Obama does, you're racist. It's bullshit. It really is. It's complete bullshit. Because they use these things of chauvinism, sexism, racism to keep us divided, because they put you on the defensive. So instead of brown shirtness like the Nazis did back in the 20s to go bellow out their opposition, they basically use political correctness to attack your ass, and so you're on the defensive, and you never get to talk about real issues. This is where you got to learn to get around this shit, read Ann Coulter's book, How to Talk to Liberal If You Must. I mean, there's some really good talking points in her book that you can use as weapons. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there that you can use and get some ideas on and fight the left. Like I said, the program that the CFCC put out, which is part of another documentary, you go to CFCC, Ohio.org, click on down, you see a video on the Frankfurt School. Watch that. It's about a 30-minute program, but it's well worth the watch. It clearly shows you how political correctness is result of critical theory, and that's a problem. With Common Core, it teaches more critical theory instead of critical thinking, and you're trying to understand why the tomato is red, why the sky is blue, why the grass is green, instead of, oh, well, the grass is green, or we're not going to break down the phonetics of the word doctor, we're just going to have you memorize the word doctor and have to put someone in a lab coat. I mean, you totally missed the point of the whole language. They've dumbed down the language. It's something right out of the movie Idiocracy. I shit you not, man. It's right out of that film. If you ever get a chance to watch that film with Luke Owen, it will really open your eyes because it almost makes you laugh and cry at the same time. But the, one of the main key things about that film is that if you don't have your government-issued scanning tattoo, automatically you get thrown into court, and it's a kangaroo court. It's like you might as well just be on a plank and just be dropped. I mean, you don't have a prayer. So it's come to that point, man. It really is. Okay, some interesting websites to check out. But lastly, there's an event coming up I thought I'd mention here. Featured on CFCC.org. Southern Marriage and Family Defense Rally is planned in Virginia. And wait for my page to load. My computer's really slow as molasses right now. I pay for a higher speed bandwidth, and I'm pretty much wasting my money here, so I'm actually positive of having that all switched. I don't know if I need to reformat my shit or just say the hell with it. Well, this damn thing won't load. Well, anyways, there are groups that still stand up for traditional marriage, and that many of the federal judges have struck down the citizens' bans on gay marriage and everything else. The people are starting to rise up and say, hey, no, we are going to stand up and fight this thing, because, and we should. Marriage has always been between a man and a woman, and that's how you have a legitimate thing. It just breaks down the family unit. We saw that the divorce, the family courts that were fabricated in the 50s weren't meant to help families, they were meant to divide them. And we see that men are automatically treated as wallets and nothing more, and that women automatically have rights well beyond the fathers. So there were a lot of fathers' rights groups out there that helped advocate for the fathers. And we need to make sure that these groups are looked at very carefully, because if not, groups such as NAMBLA, the North American Man Love Boy Association, is going to make it acceptable for pedophilia to be considered a not necessarily a preference, but an illness that should be accepted. I mean, it's sick. It is absolutely sick. And we've seen every major society that's ever embraced homosexuality has collapsed in two generations. Every single one. But that's what the globalists want. They want to make sure we cannot rejuvenate our numbers, that we keep ourselves divided over these damn political football issues, and that we don't have anything to talk about. So they're brown shirting us using political correctness and social standards. It's bullshit. I have to give them credit, though, tip of the hat. They're pretty crafty and they're very patient. Very patient. It took them 2 to 3 generations to get this thing really fired up, and now it's coming to a head. So they've done a pretty damn good job fucking this country over on social issues. So that's why someone like Ronald Reagan, during his famous Time for Choosing speech in 1964 when he was stumping for Goldwater, a lot of the elements in that speech still hold value today, which is part of the things that I feature in my intro on the Sonny Thomas Show. So we also want to remind you, too, that to support our sponsors that are starting to buy some ad times on our network. Again, we just play one at the top of the hour. The first one was our first sponsor. We also have most of the shows are archived, obviously, after we broadcast. And many times, you only hear the first 2 hours of the show, depending on whom it is. On my show, I try to do at least a half hour to an hour of overload, so that way, overdrive show, I might go ahead and play a separate program in there, or my second guest may go into that second hour so you can hear the rest of those interviews. And not to mention, you want to listen to it because of the fact that there's many times that even I, as a host, will go back and listen to it because I can concentrate on the material myself, not only critique whatever I'm doing, but listen to my guests and reabsorbing the information two or three times of re-listening because I'm able to focus on exactly what they're saying and not dealing with the mechanics of it. So I benefit listening to my guests a couple times over and reabsorbing their information and maybe even using some of those same talking points. So, but that's just me. Okay. Make sure you check out Liberty Lisa's website. I believe it's libertylisa.com. And give us some love and support on Facebook. You definitely check out our Facebook page for Truth Emerges Radio and give us some love and support, share our shows and our listings and everything else, because it's you that makes us who we are. And we're just normal blue-collar people or a couple of us who have some degrees who are saying, you know what, we're seeing shit, we don't like what we see, and we're speaking up about it. You can speak up about it. Start your own show on Blog Talk Radio. I mean, your voice is yours. Use it while you can, because one day they're going to silence all of us. And since Obama has sold over the rest of the UN to the UN our internet rights, it's only a matter of time before they either shut down the internet entirely, or we're going to go back to what it was 20 years ago when you had to pay a premium price through your ISP to log on to the website. I remember back in the mid-90s, it would cost an arm and a leg because it's a long-distance phone call, and you get online, just chatting on the message board for a few hours. You had a $40, $50 damn phone bill. Not to mention worry about the NSA attacking websites, so that's definition. So, okay, my website, sunnythomas.com, springboroteaparty.com or .org, cfccohio.org, the HMD Music Resource Guide. Look us up on Facebook and look up our advocacy page that I have on Facebook to help push Alex Jones' radio program to be on WHIO in Dayton and WKRC in Cincinnati. So Facebook.com/AlexJones, or I'm sorry, Air Alex Jones, WHIO dot WKRC on Facebook. Like and forward those pages. So appreciate your support there. Especially if we can get rid of Andy Dean, that neocon piece of shit, at least put Alex on. Push to get the Sunday broadcast on, and once it starts picking up speed, then we can start doing that, because Alex has done a lot to woken up many of us and brought us a lot of the libertarian principles that we follow today. Like I said, I'm a Jeffersonian Republican, so I'm a classical liberal in the sense of the word. So, and I'm going to tell the GOP that in every one of my speeches, and I hold them to account. And I do support candidates in many other states. And such as Joe Miller, who's running for Senate again in Alaska, definitely check out joemiller.us and maybe send us some donations and send us some support. Excellent resume for this gentleman. Hopefully he can win this time around. We have a true constitutionalist conservative in the Senate to help many of our other serious constitutionalists here in the Senate. So. Okay, we're signing off on the Truth Train. Thank you again for the lovely Liberty Lisa for having me on to fill in her spot. And we're going to sign off and jam out. And we'll be catching you here on the Sunday Thomas Show Thursday night.
Give me shelter, don't leave me behind. It's your last life, don't leave me behind. So much pain now, don't leave me alone. Under the shelter.
FathersInArmsBand.com, SpringboroTeaParty.com, DHMD.com, SonnyThomas.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.